Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning into Paranormal Talk Radio. This is not the X-Files. We are not scientists. We are not mathematicians. We are certainly not school teachers. We are no experts. We are paranormal investigators who have come together to give our audience insight and educational subjects about the paranormal field. Join us live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Without further delay, here are your hosts, Matthew J. Haas, and his partner in crime, Tim Vickers.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Paranormal Talk Radio. It is good to be back. I was not here last week, but as always, I have with me my partner in crime to help me, my partner, Mr. Tim Vickers. How are you?
Good, thank you. I'm glad that I didn't mess up the show last week.
No, you didn't. You didn't break up. You didn't break anything or break. Everything's intact. Everything's working. So you did a great job.
only pressed one button.
Oh, as long as it wasn't the nuke button.
No.
So I had a little bit of car trouble last week. So unfortunately, I had a dead battery in my car. I was all set to leave work, and I don't think work wants to ever want me to leave. So I wanted to get home as soon as I could, but my car wouldn't let me. But life happens, and the show,
life happens. Yeah,
and the show must go on. You and Kenny did a great job, and I want to just publicly thank Kenny again for helping out as always. He's always good to have on our show. And, you know, for those who miss our show, you can catch our encore and replay on our archived webpage on Blog Talk Radio. So if you miss out, don't worry. You can go to our Facebook page, and I always post it up on there if you want to take a listen to it again. That's always a cool feature. And I like that feature.
It's a good feature.
Yeah, definitely. So we have awesome guests tonight. And I can't wait to have them on. I'm very honored, Tim, to have these people as our guests. They are from the Rhine Research Center from North Carolina. It was once part of Duke University, which is a great university. It's a great college. It's very well known. They just recently split off into their own entity, and now they call themselves, I believe, the Rhine Institute for Parapsychology. And they're basically a bunch of researchers who study ESP and psychic phenomena along with psychokinesis. And this is kind of a skeptic's wet dream in a way, because we all dream of, you know, wanting our own laboratory to do study or tests on people who have experiences with psychic phenomena or even paranormal phenomena in general. It would be great to have our own laboratory.
Well, I'm very excited for this. I would love to listen to how they set up their experiments and how they set up their tests. And I think it's a good example to set. And obviously, we all don't have a lab. As soon as I hit the lottery, I'm going to have a lab. But until then, I just have a house. But it's a good example that I think they can show that people can set up their own reasonable controlled tests to, you know, look at claims. And I think it's going to be a wonderful job. I think it's going to be a wonderful show with them talking about how they do that and listening to, you know, how they look at the data, how they assign meaning to the data. And it's going to be great.
Yeah. So I want everybody to give a warm, gracious applause to welcome our guests. We have Dr. Sally Rhine Feather, Susan Freeman, and Gonzalo Vega. I hope I pronounced his name correctly. Names, like I said, are always hard to pronounce, and I talked to him earlier tonight. We did a sound check, but I believe I have his name right. If not, I apologize. But we have, so not just one researcher from the Ryan Institute, but we have three, Tim, that are here tonight. So we're going to have them on around 8 o'clock, and I can't wait. I'm excited. And, you know, parapsychology in the field is a big thing. And I just kind of want to give a little, you know, history about the Ryan. What it is today, after it split off into its own entity, in 2002, over 30 years after the move from Duke University to the FRNM building, it was decided there was a need for more modern experimental space and updated research equipment, as well as for expansion of the center's library. The aging Buchanan Avenue building was sold to Duke University, and the new building is the first ever in the world built for experimental work in parapsychology, which I think is really neat. You know, there's very few, Tim, that I know of, universities that actually deal with parapsychology.
I think I've heard University of Virginia had something going on.
Mm.
I've always heard the Ryan Institute.
Right.
Can't think of any more off the top of my head.
there's quite a few universities all around. But parapsychology is a really big thing in the paranormal field these days. I can never say enough that psychology in itself, we deal with a lot on, especially private home investigations. I don't know about you, Tim, but for myself, I find myself dealing with a lot of psychological things when it comes to dealing with clients in private settings.
I'm kind of getting, you know, as far as, I don't want to go too far off track, but the, you know, the private home investigations are a little different for me. I'm learning to take a different approach with that, and you know, that's a whole other ball of wax for where I am right now.
Yeah.
As far as paranormal goes.
Right. So, you know, if my voice seems a little off tonight, I'm just getting over being sick. I was sick all week, and like I was telling Tim before the show, I just got my voice back today. So if it sounds a little froggy, it's not 100% yet. So if I sound like I have a sound effect going on.
You sound fine.
Yeah, so hopefully I sound okay, and I don't know. I'm glad to be back, like I said, and glad to have these great guests tonight from the Ryan Institute and Research Center. And I don't know, what's going on, Tim? What's going on? What have I missed?
Well, the last show we tried to take what would be a good basis for someone that was interested in the field or the community, some good basic first steps on what they could do to learn about anything paranormal and to kind of get a good look at how to approach a paranormal investigation. And we kind of boiled it down. We had a lot of fun with that. You know, we were just kind of winging it and looking at different ways to critically think and to check yourself and your own beliefs and to make sure that you're thinking correctly. And it was a lot of fun. We boiled it down. We were an hour and a half, and we only got to the point where we're actually in the house. But, you know, we took steps of reading, making sure that you understand what people have done before you so that you don't replicate. And if you do replicate, you can miss previous mistakes.
Right.
Yeah, having a good knowledge base and looking at claims, looking at understanding your equipment, what it can do, what it can't do, if it's for entertainment purposes only. thinking about just good toolkits that you can use. And that led me, bless you.
No, thank you. No, actually, that was a cough.
Oh. Maybe you should go to the doctor.
Yeah, right. That was just one half of my lung.
Oh, hey, you're good. You're good. You know, that led me to you know, the equipment thing, and you and I have been over it just a bunch of times.
Kind of beating the beating a dead horse in a way, but.
Yeah. There are a lot of people smarter than I that have done a lot more research than I have and a lot more testing than I have. And I don't think that I have seen, and I certainly haven't seen everything, so I'm welcome to see it if it's out there. But any information or any research that backs up any type of paranormal equipment that actually has some type of validity from testing and research, that it does what it claims to do.
Right.
And most of them claim to find ghosts or find evidence of ghosts.
Well, we kind of had a little bit of a conversation before the show about this, and you know, I'd like to get into a little bit about it, if you don't mind, Tim. My opinion about the whole thing is the current equipment we're using is, how do I say, there's it's not sharing enough data to conclusively or be plausible enough to say it's paranormal. There's too much interference from the outside, such as EMF, electronic devices that can interfere with the equipment. You know, there's a whole slew of devices that can interfere with the stuff that, you know, people currently use in the field. And if that's the case, what I'd like to see done about it is maybe we should take the bar to the next level and maybe stop using a lot of this equipment. I mean, it's just basically costing you an arm and a leg and money building it or going out and buying it. You're putting a lot of investment into something that's a risk that you don't even know for sure if it's going to work. It's not a guarantee. And why not put your mind to something into equipment where you know or can't argue that there's interference with a certain tool that you might bring into an investigation? You know, like, for example, like, hypothetically. Now,
hypothetically,
I know this is out there. All right?
It's out there. Just do it.
If you, for example, have a scale, okay, a little scale, and if they have enough energy to manifest and manipulate these devices, then they should have enough energy and manipulation to the scale where they could put their energy on the scale and make the scale, you know, press down and give a weight. And if that's the case, then why aren't we thinking along the lines of using these kind of pieces of equipment rather than equipment where there's interference? You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense, but...
No, I think it makes really good sense. I like raising the bar, and I don't mind equipment. I don't mind testing equipment. I do mind if somebody gets fooled into thinking that the piece of equipment that they're buying, that they're spending 50, 100, 200 bucks on, is a valid piece of equipment that measures ghosts or essence of ghosts or trails of spirits, what have you. That bothers me because some of those are a lot of money.
Yeah.
And
it'd be a car payment.
Yeah, which is nice. It's I don't mind testing it. I don't mind people working with it. It's when the claim, it's when the logical jump happens that it goes from, oh, this stuff's doing really cool stuff. I don't know what it means. Therefore, because I don't know what it means, it must be a ghost. And
a lot of people assume that's just what it is, you know?
Yeah. I think that's the point that's always bothered me. And I want to go back and say, I don't mind the equipment. You know, as long as people, you know, aren't being fooled into believing or being tricked or being sold a bill of goods that it says it does what it doesn't do. I think when people mislead to, well, I was going to say when people mislead to make a profit, but, you know, isn't that everything? But it's bothersome to me. And so I always ask when I see a piece of equipment, I just say, you know, if you're claiming that shows you ghosts, then where is that information coming from? What research do you have? What data base did you draw that from? Where's the research that shows that?
Yep.
I'm open to it. Trust me, I'm open to it. I would love.
I totally get where you're coming from, and I'm with you on that, Tim. The other thing that also bothers me, there are two common mistakes that people make when it comes to equipment and investigations. Number one, in my opinion only, anybody else is welcome to share their opinion about it, but a lot of groups, I'm not saying everybody, I'm not, singling people out or anything like that, but a lot of groups are going out there just because they've seen it work on TV or because someone else is using it and they claim it works, not based on research and testing, but because their group went out in the field and, they used it at, an alleged haunted location. So they believe it works. And, so therefore now this group is going to go out and get that piece of equipment and then, and then so forth and so forth. And then the number two common mistake is a lot of groups are going into, especially private home investigations, thinking that a place is already haunted, and they're tainting their feelings about investigating what you're supposed to be investigating and what you're and how you're supposed to be helping your client.
Exactly.
Can I hit it right on the nail?
I think so. I guess we're kind of looking at it. We have the same philosophy on it. We're kind of looking at it, I think, in two different directions, but I think we come to the same point. I don't mind it. I think if you don't try a new piece of equipment and test it and then either find out if it works or if it doesn't work, then you can't move on if it doesn't work and build on what you've already done.
Right.
But I think you have to be realistic. And, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. If you have no clue how it works and you can't explain it, then you got to let it go. You got to move. You got to keep going forward. You got to redefine what you're looking for with that piece of equipment that you're using.
Exactly. And don't go by another group's face value because they say they think it works. Use it for yourself and learn it for yourself. Learn what it does and test it yourself. If you think it works because of the testing that you've done, document that and share it with the public that if you think, this certain piece of equipment, that you like to use and you think it does have validity, to an investigation, then by all means, me and Tim are saying that we welcome that. We want to see that more. But there's a lack of that.
Well, I kind of think a lot of people, and this is my opinion, so it really doesn't mean anything more than just my opinion. I kind of think with a lot of the equipment and the belief in the equipment, it just comes from, instant gratification, maybe. You want it to beep. You want something to be there. And so when something does blink or beep or give a buzz or whatever they do, it's very exciting. It's very rewarding.
Yeah.
It's rewarding in the moment, and it's rewarding when you make a splash reel, and put it out on your web page, and it's just very rewarding. And I think probably one of the cool things that the researchers that we'll talk to later will discuss, I think research is probably far more boring, at least over the long term, than it is exciting. I think you'll have exciting findings, whether they're good or they're bad or they're positive or they're negative, or if it's something that's completely different than what you thought it was going to be. But I think there's probably a lot of repetition and a lot of data logging, a lot of looking at charts, a lot of math, a lot of statistics.
Yeah.
And I think that's the quagmire I think people get stuck into, because that's kind of hard. Honestly, doing research is difficult. If it wasn't difficult, we'd all be doing great research.
Yeah. Well, we have about 10 minutes before we get our guest on tonight. Again, if you're just joining us late, we have three wonderful people from the Ryan Research Center from North Carolina. They were once part of Duke University a few years ago, but now they're their own entity, and they, I believe, are calling themselves the Ryan Institute for Parapsychology, but they are really known as the Ryan Research Center. I was kind of corrected with that earlier in the evening when doing a sound check with them. But basically, the work that they're doing, the work that was started in the 1950s, Tim, by Louisa Ryan, these three individuals, Dr. Sally Rinefeather, Gonzalo Vega, and Susan Freeman, are kind of continuing. You know, she's the daughter of Louisa Ryan, and they're continuing the work of ESP experiences from everyday people from all walks of life. So they're getting all these reports from thousands of people. They're getting thousands of reports from all over the world, and they take these reports and they're studying them, I guess, to a T. They analyze the cases with a better understanding for PSI experience and, you know, educate the general public, you know, about what they do. And they have classes, I believe, that they offer, which is awesome, in parapsychology and ESP. And I don't know, I can't wait. It's going to be exciting.
I think so.
Before we get them on, I do want to have a definition of what parapsychology is. So if people who are not familiar with parapsychology, this is a short definition, is the study of mental phenomena that are excluded from or inexplicable by orthodox scientific psychology, such as hypnosis and telepathy, etc. So that's your basic definition of parapsychology. Which is pretty cool. You know, what's really cool about our guests is that they have their own institute going on, and they're their own entity, and they have a laboratory. They do all these, like, cool testing, you know, stuff with, like, whatever machines that they use. I want to ask them what kind of computers and stuff. You know, like, do they hook people, like, if they actually have individuals who come in there and, you know, like, kind of like Ghostbusters, where in the beginning where Dr. Venkman had the guy hooked up to the shock machine.
Uh-oh.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And then every time he got a wrong answer, he would shock him.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I like that part. So, yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be exciting. And I don't know. Yeah, so, you know, yeah, the whole equipment thing has been bothering me lately. You know, even recently, Tim, I've been really heavily involved in the testing and researching the Kinect, which Bill Hyland and myself have gotten involved with over recent investigations. You know, I have software that he gave me that we're testing out, you know, in the field during our actual investigations. And we're comparing notes. Like, anytime I get stuff, I send him information. You know, what does he think about this? You know, what does he see? What does he think this is? He has a blog, I think, up on paranormalwarehouse.com. And he explains what the Kinect does and what his opinion is that, unfortunately, the software does have many glitches in version 1. Version 2 is a little better, but unfortunately, he can't get it to lock onto anything.
Mm-hmm.
As much as he did originally with version 1. I have version 1, and unfortunately, because of the glitches, I can't say for sure that, you know, there's anything paranormal going on because of the glitches. So I, unfortunately, a lot of it I have to throw out because of that, you know, pure information, you know, that this is research that Bill worked on, that he was able to test it and, you know for sure that it definitely has its glitches. So, you know, one of his issues with it is a lot of people are out there using it now because of TV shows that we know have introduced it, and people think they're getting something paranormal, like, you know, on the Kinect now. And unfortunately, because there are glitches, like, now I'm, like, kind of disappointed. I'm like, now I'm afraid to use it again, and, you know, because I can't present something it being paranormal if it has glitches. You know, and I would imagine that a lot of this equipment, Tim, is, you know, it is experimental, and, you know, it's not something that's mainstream, because this is paranormal. Like, let's be honest, everything we do is paranormal. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, how do you know what's paranormal if we don't know, like, you know, everyday common sense things, you know?
Yeah, I love that question. That's one of my favorite questions. How do you know? I think that's the perfect question. And I think a perfectly fine answer to how do you know, I think perfectly reasonable answer and response is, I don't know. You know, I don't understand. But with that, and that kind of goes back to what I was saying, you know, when you don't know, when you don't understand, I think it's great to say at that moment, hey, this is really interesting stuff we're getting here, but I can't assign a value to it because I don't know what it is.
Right.
And I kind of think that's where it should stop.
Yep.
You know, and I, and if you keep using the same equipment in the same way that you do over and over, and you keep getting the same results that you don't understand, then you either got to change your method or you got to change your equipment, or at least you got to go back and redesign or relook at what you're doing in your in your method on what you're studying or what you think you're measuring. You know, if your you know validity is, are you measuring what you think you're measuring, or are you measuring what you are hoping you're measuring? And if you don't know, you don't know. So
yeah.
You just got to figure it out.
Yep.
But I like that. I mean, that's exciting to me. I don't know is great.
Yeah. And I just, you know, what saddens me is the lack of testing and validity of this equipment. People are just kind of, you know, throwing this stuff out there and say, here, try it. You know, I with this idea that's going to do this or that. But they're not really explaining to you, like, how it was built, you know, what it was designed to do. And a lot of them, you know, have the label, you know, for entertainment purposes only.
Shocker.
And I just can't put faith into something that has a label on it. And I don't know. I'm just, like, I'm kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. Because as much as I am for a lot of equipment, but a lot of it I don't want to waste my money on because it's something that's not guaranteed. And until you can validate something for me and prove to me that it works, then I'll use it. You know, then I'll say, all right, then maybe we can start researching with this and then go from there, you know?
Yeah. And again, I think that you don't have to – you know, you don't have to find the ghost, so to speak, to put it in a very encapsulating phrase, but you can find what is common in reports of haunted places. You can find what is a commonality, what happens to the environment, what changes happen that accompany reports or sightings or feelings or experiences of ghosts or demons or spirits, you know, oh my. I think that's great. I think there's nothing wrong with that. And I think that's what equipment can do. And you don't have to see it, but if you can, and by it can be anything. If you can't find it, look for changes that it happens, that it makes in the environment. And if you find different changes and you see them, you can record them over a long period of time, not one night, not 8 hours, not 4 hours, but over a long period of time. Then you have something to at least say, we have something that happens that is related to, or at least seemingly related to, reports of paranormal activity. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's great. So, you know, what's the saying? How do you eat an elephant, right? One bite at a time, you know? One.
Well, I don't know if I'd actually really eat an elephant.
No, I wouldn't either because I really like them, but that's the saying, I guess. You do it one bite at a time. So if you can't get the whole shot, and I think, you know, it probably might be overshooting to try to find the ghost, at least. If you can't get that, at least look at something that might be a commonality with what the ghost might be.
And not only that, Tim, like, I don't want our frustration as fellow investigators or researchers on the air, on radio, I don't want everybody to hear our frustrations as discouragement. You know, I want to encourage more people to send their reports, you know, in the public. Don't be afraid to share you know, your information with everybody, because whether it's good or bad criticism, you know, it's still a step forward when you're sharing that information.
That's a great point, Matt.
Right?
Yeah.
And
I mean, but it is. That really is. It's, you know, putting out somehow in a published form what you did, how you did it, and what your results were, so that other people can look at it and try to do what you did, or at least give you feedback. Like, I certainly don't know, I don't know everything. I mean, I don't, the equipment stuff is beyond me, like the electronics. Like, Bill Hyland is just, he's a genius to me when I listen to him talk. I'm like, how do you even understand the stuff that happens? I don't have a grasp on that, but thanks to becoming his friend and meeting him, I now know, I have somebody I can go to. So if something electronic is happening that I don't understand, I don't have to know everything. I can put something out, I can send it to him, I can share it with him, and he can give me his interpretation or what he sees is going on. Kenny Biddle with photography.
Yeah.
You know, I have no firm grasp on photography either. I can point and I can click a camera.
Yeah.
But I certainly am no expert in it. I could not give an expert opinion on a photograph, but I know somebody who can.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
I can put something out to somebody that knows it and has a professional background in it.
Sure.
Steve Brightwell, who's on our team, he's a professional photographer. I mean, it's what he does for 20-some years. He's working on either his master's or his doctorate in photography through something. I'm not sure, but, I mean, he's educated. He's going through university for it. Great resource. So putting stuff out so other people can look at it. And, you know, of course, the big step is, you know what the hard part of it is, don't you, Matt?
I don't know. You tell me.
Taking the feedback.
Oh yeah. But let's. We got to get our guests on.
Yep.
Yep.
I'm running my mouth, aren't I?
It's all right. But we can talk about it more later. And without further delay, I want to welcome and give a warm welcome to our great guests from the Ryan Research Center and Ryan Institute for Parapsychology, Gonzalo Vega, Susan Freeman, and Dr. Sally Wine. So here we go as we get them on board here. And hi, Gonzalo, are you there?
Hi, Matt. Yes.
How are you guys doing? Again, all three of you, you know, thank you so much, you know, publicly. Gonzalo, I hope I pronounced your name correctly.
Perfectly, actually.
Great.
That's fun.
I always tell Tim, like, one of the hardest things of having guests on your show, and I always do research beforehand, I even try to listen to interviews, like, on other shows to make sure I try to get the names right. Because it can embarrass you if you don't, and, you know, because names are kind of hard to pronounce on the air.
Yeah, no, you're great.
Great. We have Susan Freeman and the renowned Dr. Sally Reinfeather. All three of you, thank you so much for being here tonight. You guys are from the Ryan Research Center from North Carolina. It was once part of Duke University, and you guys are now your own entity, which I think is really cool. The one coolest thing I think you guys have is your own laboratory to do your own research, and I don't know, I commend you for that. I'm kind of jealous in a way. But, you know, how about we, you know, whoever wants to start off first, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got involved with the Research Center, and I guess go from there, whoever wants to take the first shot.
Okay, this is Sally. I think I'll start first since I'm way and above the others in age here, and I've been around since the beginning of the Ryan Research Center, although I was a toddler then and not paying too much attention. But my folks started, J.B. and LaWise Ryan, came down to North Carolina and to follow a professor down here who was very interested in whether or not you could study this kind of the paranormal in a university setting. Now, you know, that's unusual because it's even today it's extremely unusual that a university would want to have anything to do with a, quote, paranormal. Well, certainly back in the 1920s, it was the same way. But there was one professor who thought it was suitable to study it. Now, they thought, my dad and mom, thought they were interested in the same thing that that your paranormal investigators are. They were curious about the unknown, and particularly about, was there an afterlife? They had some mediumistic readings, you know, some material had been given to them that really looked very promising from mediums about a certain case. And they came down here thinking that's what they would do. They would find if this could be studied in a scientific way, because up to that point, mediums had pretty bad reputation back in the 1920s. And there was a lot of, this was kind of a bad topic. But anyway, to make a long story short, they finally realized they couldn't find a way of studying it scientifically. But what they could do was see if the idea of telepathy and clairvoyance, which have been known throughout all times, half the people in this country probably believe in what we now call ESP, but we used to call telepathy. It was just sort of taken for granted, but actually was never really studied scientifically in any continuous way until that time. So that's the long story short, is that they working with Dr. McDougall, they found a way of bringing this into the laboratory. You mentioned we do have our own laboratory and always have, but it's not a big production like a chemistry laboratory or a medical center. It's let's say a room with some chairs and some cards and that sort of thing is what it was in the 1930s.
Right.
And so that's how it began studying. The ESP card testing, I won't go into all that now because it could go on for hours and bore you to tears.
Sure.
But that's how it began.
Sure. I was telling Tim earlier in the show, like, I remember, I'm sure you guys have watched the classic movie Ghostbusters, where Dr. Venkman was testing his customers, I guess you would call it, or his volunteers. And they had them hooked up to a machine, and every time he would pull out a card, if they got it wrong, he'd shock the guy that was hooked up to the shock machine. And that's kind of what I picture in a way, but I don't know what kind of equipment you guys are currently using. But.
Well, it's never anything negative.
Yeah.
Of course, it's just the opposite. You might get a reward or a smile.
Yeah. Yeah. But I like to throw that in there to kind of lighten the mood a little bit. But, Susan and Catalo, if you guys want to, let us know how you met up with Dr. Sally Rhinefeather and how you got involved with the current research you guys are doing.
Well, Matt, this is Susan. I started volunteering at the Rhine about 2009, and shortly after that, I was hired to be the events coordinator and a little bit of administrative work as well. And I worked very closely with Sally, and as you know and mentioned, she has always had these case reports around, and when you start to read those, it's hard to stop, and so they're very interesting, and there's certain aspects of reading these reports that are most important to me is how it affects people, how it confuses them, or they're fearful, or they can't tell people about it. And then we sort of did a pilot study a couple of years ago studying the reports, and now it's turned into a full-fledged research project where we read these reports and we encourage people to send in these reports, and we try to study the reports and see if we can learn about the experience, about the people who have them, what are the conditions. They're spontaneous experiences. It's not like you can tell somebody to go sit in a room and have an experience. These are just things that people might write in about. So we've really undertaken, trying to figure this out. I think the point would be to educate people about this type of experience, the community at large, to offer people a place to report these experiences. And so many people thank us for this work because they realize they're not alone, and somehow that seems to soothe their fears that they're crazy. And, we don't look at it that way at all, that they're crazy. We just realize these are things that happen. So that's sort of wear a lot of hats here, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Cantalo, how did you meet up with them, and how did you start your research with them?
Well, a year ago, I moved from Portugal to to Durham, North Carolina, and I contacted Sally, and so I could see what they were up to, their research, and because I was always interested in studying spontaneous cases, my previous experience is in clinical psychology and anthropology, and I thought that, you know, I could put those skills to use, and parapsychology had always been a major interest of mine. And so we've been working together for a year now, and we are analyzing some of the cases that are coming through via email mostly these days. And
maybe we should give an example. We've talked about case. I'm not sure that everybody knows. This is not like somebody calling up and saying, I have a ghost in my house. Please come out and help me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, that might be a case that you would call you about.
Yeah. How do you guys go about your cases?
Okay. Well,
as Gonzalo mentioned, most of these reports, maybe it would be better to call it that, are sent in via email these days. They used to come by mail by the thousands, and Louisa Ryan answered them by the thousands. Now they come in by email, and there's a place on our website, in fact, to report an experience, which we'll give you certainly sometime this evening. And we have a questionnaire that we ask them a few questions, and we ask them to, in detail and as clearly as possible, talk about their experience. And they write the story, what happened, you know, and it's just one story after the other. And then they answer their age, how old they were when it happened, if they've ever told anybody, what was the response when they told somebody. And you sort of accumulate all of these reports, and you try to see if there's similarities. For example, a lot of people say in their reports that they were doing something like washing the dishes or raking leaves or driving their car or getting dressed. In other words, they were totally, you know, doing something else when all of a sudden they heard a voice, and the voice told them to go into the other room. There was a fire, and it made no logical sense whatsoever. But they acted on the voice, and they went in and found they had left the stove on. And so, of course, they stopped, you know, a terrible situation from possibly happening. And, you know, they're confused. What voice was it? Why did it happen to me? But a lot of them start out that way. They were doing something else. They received information. They took action, and they averted a disaster. And so there's a similarity there that we see in the reports. Not all of them are that clear-cut, but you know, we try to figure out if females are more apt to experience this, or males, if it's more from between relationships of like mother and children or husband and wife. That's what we're looking for, and how they feel about it, if they've told people, and how other people respond to what they told.
Right. Have you asked any of them to come into your laboratory per se and study them actually in person, or have you had anybody volunteer?
Well, lots of people volunteer, but we really don't study people per se, one-on-one.
Mm. I will interrupt to say that there was a study that we had going on before Gonzalo and Susan came, in which we did a little bit of that. And those were another kind of experience. We've talked a little bit about what we'd call ESP stories, the ones that Susan mentioned. Another kind of study that I've been collecting and is now I'm still collecting would be when something physical happens that you have no explanation for. This is the clock that stops when grandfather died, or the picture that falls off the wall of grandma when at times she's dying, let's say. Mm-hmm. Unusual things happen, not always even around a crisis, but usually around a crisis. Well, we did start collecting those, and we did interview Dr. Christine Simmons-Moore and myself. We interviewed 10 people out of about 30 because we wanted to go and get in-depth what they were saying about it. We were looking at how they experienced things. And on the basis of that, we were hoping to work up a questionnaire. Now, we haven't followed up on that yet. You can, but we're looking for commonalities. You use the word commonality in what you do.
Right.
That's exactly what we're doing. We do it in different ways across many, many cases in which we don't interview people, or intensely in some people's writings you could do it, or some of their words.
Yeah. Right.
Gonzalo could say.
Actually, one of the interesting things about our kind of research, which is qualitative in nature, mm-hmm. is that, so while we have lab research, which is experimental, it's mostly quantitative, you know, lots of variables are controlled to the point that actually at one point they don't seem like real life situations, you know. So in a way, we are interested in analyzing these reports that people send in that occur in their everyday life, you know, they just occur and without any sort of variable being controlled. And that's the kind of stories that we're interested in.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. You know, I think us as paranormal investigators, we just get really heavy with our set of questionnaires. Tim, I don't know about you, but I purposely do it because we do volunteer and we're going into private home settings. We're going to their location. And I'd rather not put us in harm's way or have them in the harm's way. It's more of a safety reason than anything, because if there are, like, alcohol abuse or physical abuse going on, that you want to rule out first, because you don't want to put yourself in that kind of position, you know?
We are so fortunate we don't have to deal with, you know, that heavier situation. Ours is a little more protected because we deal with what people send to us by and large, or else they come to see us, or those few people that we would select.
Right, right.
And fortunately, so much of the reports that we get are by email that we don't really, some people are all over the world, so it's not like we can have them come here, but we can follow up with them with more questions in detail if we need to beef up or understand more clearly the report that we've read.
Right. Are there any particular cases that you've recently done that stand out for you guys the most?
Well, we're actually looking for one particular type of case more than the other, but we're collecting whatever anybody wants to send us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to back up a little bit before we get too far, because I should set a framework. My mother, when she had collected her first 3,000 cases, now she went on beyond that. She did the first 3,000 and she broke them down to see what they were, and she found that 60% of them were psychic dreams.
Hmm.
When I say psychic dreams, that is, she had to throw away some if they just had some unusual dream and it didn't come true, so it wasn't psychic. But if a dream was of something that was actually happening at that moment, I dreamed that the baby is sick and I ran down the hall and found out the baby was seriously ill at that moment in time or something. You know, somehow I didn't hear it, but I dreamed it. But she found that 60% of the experiences that people sent in were dreams. 30% were hunches, waking intuitions. I just know something's wrong. I got to get home. I don't know why I know it. I just know it. That's the cases. Well, and then along with that, there were also some other kind of waking experiences that we're also studying. The waking ones, I think Susan mentioned, when you hear a voice.
Right.
But it's not just a voice by itself, because then it would just be imagination. We wouldn't know what it was. But if the voice brings information or a warning of something, or if you feel a touch on your shoulder and nobody's there, but it coincides with the time your brother is in battle and got hurt or something, you know, if it coincides with something, then we would include it. And that would include hearing, seeing, feeling of that sort. So waking experiences we're particularly interested in right now because we think they're easier to study, to be frank. There's less variables than if you have to take a whole dream and try to sort it out. So waking hunches are a particular interest to us because we want to try to figure out what's going on.
Right. I can't imagine the size of your file cabinets.
Well, we share them.
Yeah.
An example of a waking experience, like I said, it's usually someone is busy doing something, but for example, a young man is driving and he's speeding along, and he writes that he hears a voice. Now, he's concerned that he's heard a voice, but he's decided it's his mother's voice, and she tells him to slow down, so he slows down. Shortly after that, the tire of his car falls off, and he realizes that had he been going at the 65 miles an hour that he was traveling before the voice told him to slow down, he probably would have had a far more serious accident than just being able to go 20 miles an hour and pull over on the side of the road.
Hmm.
So it's that kind of thing. And a lot of people want to attribute the voice to someone they know or it's hard for them to just think they've heard a voice. And did they really hear a voice or did they think it? So all of these things are questions we're looking at, you know, how to explain a little more in depth what these stories are about.
Right. Tim, you have any questions for them? I know we've been kind of going on.
No, it's been really great listening. And I love a point that I heard earlier about just a follow-up question. When it sounds like you gather large data and then you look for patterns or commonalities.
Yeah.
And when you find the patterns or commonalities, what do you do? Do you do anything to try to hone in on what that pattern is or what people might be doing at the same time, or I'm not sure what I want to say, or just to examine like what that commonality is?
I think we're still in the process of figuring out what to do. I mean, the more data we collect and the more evidence, so to speak, that we have that supports this usually happens in a situation like that, it helps it to have a little clout when you're trying to write a paper for the Journal of Parapsychology or deliver this at a talk for the, you know, some conference or something.
But I think we could go further with it like you would if you found that most of the families that you went to see had a disturbed child, for instance.
Right,
that would lead you in one direction, or if it was over, it was a certain time when the moon was, I don't know, it fit in with the geomagnetic quadrants or something. You first have to find the commonalities, and again, we hope we're setting wide enough net that we will catch them, and then we'll let the data lead us.
It sounds like just in conversation that you have one that sounds interesting that you spoke about. If people have, while they're awake, experience, if there's trauma to be avoided or someone needs help.
Sure.
I mean, that sounds like it's interesting enough that that's kind of what we've been talking about.
And that is already been a common finding from my mother's early work, that the majority, I would say 60, 70, maybe 80, I've got it somewhere else, 85% of her experiences had to do with negative outcomes. Now, you know, if people win the lottery, do occasionally have psychic lead them to that, but it's not that common. And I think they've reported. I don't think this is a reporting error. I think this is a reflection of the fact that psychic ability, whatever it is a human ability to help us avoid trouble or let us know in advance so at least we get used to the fact.
Well, my brother wins the lottery, I'm going to feel it.
Yeah.
True story.
Yeah.
It just reminded me of something. So, which we find very interesting, which is, so whenever we look for the commonalities or the patterns in the stories, we try to come up with theories to explain them. So in the case of, like, you know, a mother with her child, if something is wrong, if the majority of cases happen between the mother and the daughter, or if it's within family members, we can say that there's something emotional about these psychic experiences, that there is a component in our psyche which makes us more aware of those which we share the most, right? Mm-hmm. So the current director of the Parapsychological Association, Dr. Jim Carpenter, actually has a really good theory, which he calls first sight. So he actually posits this idea that psychic abilities are actually our first line of defense or our first line of perception. So, and according to his model, when we act on a psychic impulse, we're actually doing so for almost evolutionary purposes, right? Because you are reacting against a future danger, something that could posit a danger for you or one of those, you know, one of your family members. So it kind of has a function. These psychic experiences actually might have a function. That is one of the interesting outcomes from analyzing these patterns and commonalities. I don't know if you guys in your research also experienced that.
Well, before I get into that, before I forget what you talked about, an evolutionary benefit to it, that kind of made me think about identical twins and genetic. You know, I hear a lot of stories about identical twins that seem to have at least more, I don't know if they're more popular stories because you hear about them more, but have you guys ever studied any genetic link with this where identical twins separated and something happens with one twin and the other twin has a notion that something happened to them?
There have only been a few studies of none that I know of, separated. I don't know that. I think just the fact that the data shows that closely related people seem to have more experiences back and forth, but not going as far as looking at twins. It should be done, but a lot of things don't get done here because there isn't funding for them. You know, more could be done, as you know.
That's a true story everywhere.
Everywhere,
yeah.
Isn't it, Tom?
I wish we got paid for what we do.
Likewise, I'm a volunteer.
Yeah, I think that the genetic link would be interesting, as it would be a genetic link. Probably identical twins would have a stronger genetic link than a parent-child link, I would imagine.
I'm going to interrupt by saying I think there's psychological factors that go beyond that. It's not as simple as that. I mean, I've noticed that when people come in here in experiments in the past, they bring their brother or sister along or their spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a spouse will come along just because they should. There are not too many brothers and sisters that are going to come unless they like each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not been studied clearly, but I think a lot has to do with how well you're getting along with your sibling.
Mm-hmm.
We hear the story of siblings of twins that they do share a lot of experiences, but I don't think they necessarily do psychic experience. Because then the same with brothers and sisters. I think we have to look also how well they're getting along, do they like each other, and how are they feeling that day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very psychic ability is transient. It's nothing we can just get hold of and catch for sure, and that's what makes it so difficult.
There have been a lot of studies about twins, even separated at birth, that wear the same clothes and like the same music and all of that, and that seems to be more under psychology than parapsychology. In the hundreds of stories that I've read, I don't believe there's been a single one from a twin reporting an experience with a twin. There are a number of experiences between brother and sister.
Yeah, a lot of
a sister may literally see her brother walk in the door to report that he's okay. After they've been informed that he was killed in a battle. And only to find out 2 days later that, in fact, he wasn't killed. And she saw her brother walk in the door. So there's more reports like that than between twins. So they're really fascinating anyway.
Yeah, the whole thing is really amazing. You know, in a way, there's a lot of psychology. I was explaining to Tim earlier in the show. For myself, I find getting more involved with psychology, especially when it comes to private home setting investigations, that you really are hugely responsible for our clients' well-being, and got to make sure that they're okay, you know, before, during, and after our investigation, because it could play a very heavy psychological role on their life, you know.
Yes, absolutely. So so that's one of the components, the after effects of these experiences, is something which we're very interested in, because unlike many other types of psychic experiences, such as NDEs, near-death experiences, or out-of-body experiences, we don't really know much about the after effects of ESP or psychokinesis. How do people manage with it? How do they cope with it? How do they feel about it? You know, is it something which is from, you know, the devil, according to their own definition of what's good, what's evil? So there's a lot of variables that usually people from the field of psychology don't take into account, just because it's deemed paranormal or parapsychological, and actually has an impact on these people's lives.
Yeah,
we feel very strong about that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great point that you bring up about religion, and if it's a taboo in the religion, how would they deal with it?
Absolutely.
They would even report it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, many people say that they have never told anyone. In fact, there's a program on our website that Sally and I and a woman named Pamela St. John, who runs our Psychic Experiences group, gave. It's free to watch on our website under our media library. It's ESP Stories from the Rhine, and the title is I Never Told Anybody, People Who Can't Tell People Because They're Afraid. And a lot of reports start with, I've never told anybody this because. Mm-hmm. When we did the pilot study, we chose over 160 cases, some divided between Louisa Ryan's cases that were more from the 50s and 60s to Sally's cases more current. And we were trying to see any similarities or differences. And what we found was out of the 160-some cases, only 3 people felt this experience was beneficial, even though the outcomes were beneficial. They stopped a problem. They stopped an accident. They saved a baby. But the experience at large, it scared them to the point where they didn't know what to do. Now, some people have scary experiences where they see somebody turn gray and then 2 days later that person drops dead. They're really confused because they don't want to see that kind of thing, and that's a horrible thing.
They might write us and ask us how to stop having this ability.
Yeah.
Wow. Have you guys, in your cases, have had people, come asking for your help, like plead for help, and has there been a gratifying case where you have been able to help somebody if there was a situation that somebody really needed, desperately for your help? And has there anything where you have been able to help somebody say, like, all right, with this data, we think you're having this experience, or, this is what we think about your situation?
Well, we don't use those words exactly, but, for example, the first line of defense we offer to our local community is something called the Psychic Experiences Group. It's once a month, and it's headed by Pamela St. John, the woman I just mentioned. And it's a group where our little library fills up with 30 or so people, and they're all there to hear, be heard, or listen and share with no judgment and no therapy involved, just sharing to hear that they're not alone and that there's a lot of people having the same experiences. That's really what we offer our community immediately. As I work at the Rhine, sometimes the phone rings, and on the other end is someone who's pretty much distraught over an experience. And I'm not a therapist, and I can't say I think that you've had a such and such experience. But just listening and recommending books or topics or really truly just listening and asking a few questions, mm-hmm. they start to clarify it for themselves as they talk it through. Now, sometimes it's way above my abilities. First of all, I don't have the time to talk to people all day. So I might recommend they call Pamela St. John, and Pamela will talk with them and give them some time. And then if it really seems something, we might recommend Jim Carpenter that was mentioned, or a therapist, Athena Drews in New York, that deals mostly with children. So we have sort of a line of defense that we go through, but for the most part, people just need to talk.
Right. We are very clear that we're not a counseling center. We're not equipped for that, and that would be dangerous to get into that realm.
Right.
But we are an educational center, and in that, all of this is done under the domain of education. And there actually are classes. The more people with experience learn about their ability on whatever level, I even wrote a book 10 years ago called The Gift, which is about the ESP experiences that people have been sending to me. And that book still sells. It's found on Amazon. And people still just say, they can't find that information ordinarily. Who can you go to talk to? And that's as Susan outlined very well. So giving them education is, we think, the best thing that we can do here. And there are even some other groups from us around the country that we've started in other places.
Cool.
And when people call and we talk it through, at some point I ask them to please go online and fill out an experience report, because then we have that in our database and we can use that to help us to learn more, to help the community learn more, and so forth and so on. So it does happen. The people call, but not nearly as often as they write.
Right. Are there forms that are available to the public on your website?
Well, it's if you go onto our webpage, rhine.org, and that's R-H-I-N-E. I might be pronouncing that with a southern accent. It's like the river, the Rhine River, rhine.org. At the bottom of the page, it says report and experience. And if you go into that, it's at the middle of the bottom of the page, report and experience. And that will guide you through to describe your event as clearly and thoroughly as possible. And right here, I'd like to say, it doesn't mean, say, I had a dream about my grandfather. That doesn't tell us anything.
Mm-hmm.
If it was, I had a dream about my grandfather, and the next day we had a call that he had fallen, that's more what we need. So we ask to describe it as clearly as possible. And then there's a voluntary questionnaire that I think I mentioned before about some of the different questions we're curious about.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a question at the very bottom that says, could we use this report in our research, which is, of course, anonymous. That's where we steer people to our website.
That's really great that you guys, you know, have done that. That you can offer that to the public, because there's not many websites that you can go to that have all this, you know, type of information available. And it's not that, you know, it's not available, but, you know, maybe some people don't know how to put it up there, or, you know, things like that. You know, some people aren't good at computers, or, you know, whatever the reason may be. But I think it's great that you guys did that. I've visited your website. I can see, like, there's just so much, like, information to learn and read, and like I'm not even like halfway through, and this is like so much. But I commend you guys for a job well done on that website. And again, it's rhine.org, R-H-I-N-E, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Have you guys ever run into a situation where you might have worked with or considered to work with paranormal investigators?
We have referred to them, and there used to be some local groups. I haven't recently. I don't know. There probably still are quite a few. I'll tell you what I often refer to. If I have a question, I get an email and I write to Professor Paranormal Lloyd Auerbach.
Yeah.
You know Lloyd Auerbach's work.
We're all familiar with him. Yep.
Yeah, everybody is. I just think his website is really helpful. He even has guidelines how to be a investigator 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and which many of the rest of you may also have. But he's an expert on complicated situations sometimes. If it's somebody in his area, which that's out in California. We used to have contacts and could find them again with a particular area, because if something's happening in North Carolina and you're only based in Long Island, you know, it's a little difficult.
Yeah, sure.
We used to have a network of people, and perhaps we will again.
There are a number of people that we recommend when people call with ghosts or hauntings or mm-hmm. something along those lines. It really has nothing to do with what we're researching here. And so there maybe is a handful of people that we might recommend that mm-hmm. seem to be well qualified. We might suggest they call them just to give them something.
Sure.
Right.
We used to have, of course, wonderful people like Bill Roll. If there were a poltergeist case, we don't hear. Poltergeist cases are something which we might ourselves talk to people about. Even our director, John Kruth, would get on the telephone and help someone, give them advice. Because that overlaps. Poltergeist experiences overlap with what we're very interested in here. We call it PK, psychokinesis. We have the understanding that people themselves have energy which make things happen, and it's not necessarily a little ghost running around and knocking things off the wall. You probably have had some of the same. If you've done any investigations,
yeah,
you may have the same impressions.
Yeah, a couple of cases stand out for me in the past. What I refer to as a human haunting.
Yes.
In a way, that's how I explain it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they basically are manifesting, you know, their activities through their own imagination because they have trouble coping with reality in a way. And, you know, they have either suppressed feelings or, you know, they have some serious medical conditions or, you know, mental health issues that could be going on and so forth. And rather than, you know, dealing with, you know, those matters, they will, like, you know, it'll come out, you know, through psychokinesis, you know, basically. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and then, yeah, so definitely can relate to that.
And I think a lot more can be done and probably will be done even here on that line, just as guidelines to people who have this kind of experience to help them at home before they come to need an investigator.
Yeah.
But I think this is an unexplored territory among the researchers in our domain, maybe
right.
Less so for you.
Right, right. When you guys, you know, when the research center kind of formed, how, like, because I know it's been around for a number of years, and back in the day, we all know it was taboo, and, you know, nobody was allowed to talk about it, and, you know, if you did, you know, you were kind of, like, you know, shied away from, and people thought you were weird and strange, or you were a witch, and, you know, you were dealt with black magic and whatever, but how did your university kind of react, like, in the beginning, like,
Well, Matt, that was a long time ago. The parapsychology laboratory at Duke ended in 1965. That was over 50 years ago.
Right.
So at that time, it was laboratory work, and they weren't doing – my father was very careful that they did not do field investigations where things might get – where were really well controlled, just if nothing else, the publicity aspect of it because of the difficulty that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So it's less the case now because we are independent, but we are still extremely careful that we do things very properly and, you know, following ethical standards and so forth. And,
right.
And that's why. And we really aren't set up to have people. We don't have a staff that can go out and work as you do on the field work. So that's long since ended, and so that takes care of worrying about that particular thing, but we have to rely upon other people then.
Right, right.
But the stigma, you mentioned the stigma, and I think Susan explained it too, that we all realize it's still an important consideration.
I was talking with someone in my neighborhood recently, and she asked what I did, and I told her I worked at the Rand Research Center, and she went, "Oh my God, I would have never thought." And I don't know what she meant by that.
Uh-oh.
But usually it's a good thing.
Usually it's a good thing for us.
Yeah.
Well, locally, we're getting a pretty good reputation, but there are still people who, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I think it's confusing to stay away.
There at the beginning, when people would ask, "What do?" you know, and for your hobby, and I would say,
Yeah.
And the initial response was, oh my gosh. Aren't you scared of demons? You know, all that's demons. You're going to get a demon. The demon's going to follow you home.
Right. And the television hasn't helped you any, has it?
No. Yeah, stay away from, you know, static TV.
That's right. That's made it all a lot worse.
Yeah.
So let me ask, before we run out of time, I had this on a note, and I've heard it a couple times. What are your thoughts, or do you guys do a lot or take a lot of data from reports from near-death experiences?
So, actually, that is one of the areas where the University of Virginia, the Department of Perceptual Studies, they're more involved in.
Right. Right. We don't study that directly. We have friends. Actually, the international office for the IANDS is in our building here, and they're good friends of ours. So there's a lot of overlap of knowledge, but we don't study near-death experiences. And they come and we just talk about the overlap that we have between, and there is a big overlap. People who've had NDEs are more psychic. Not all of them, but more people tend to be.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great example, however, of the two areas that share information.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we stress on the show a lot about sharing information and sharing data. To come together with a greater knowledge base. And sometimes it doesn't work out so well. Yeah, sometimes it does. But I like to hear examples of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad, you know, if somebody can look at two, you know, major institutions that are doing some really good research and see the benefits of learning from one another and not.
Absolutely. We have programs on almost any topic in the paranormal realm you can think of. We've had programs on ghost hunting, and we certainly had someone on EVPs, which come in your domain, and but we have them on NDEs and OBEs and what else? That aren't
apparitions,
healing. Certainly healing. We haven't even mentioned healing. That's a big, big topic here of interest. So, we try to keep educated ourselves and help the public get educated.
Are you guys, so the healing, is that like self-healing?
No, it's a lot of different aspects about healing. It's how does the healer feel? How does the healee feel?
Okay.
How is it done? Is it PK? Is it, what is it? There's just so much to study. You know, there's so many modalities and so many techniques. And it's a very popular and rich subject right now.
Is it anything, and I don't know if it's close or not, but I had read and actually went to the Museum of Edgar Cayce.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Is that something that is common? I'm not sure if I understood. That's why I was kind of throwing it out there. But you know, Edgar Cayce was pretty interesting. And I think that's in North Carolina.
No, it's in Virginia Beach.
The
Association for Research and Enlightenment in Virginia Beach. You know, Edgar Cayce was a phenomenal person. He was a medical intuitive before anyone knew what a medical intuitive was. And his ability to intuit illnesses and their cures was amazing. And that's not exactly what we're talking about as far as healing. It might be, if you could, and I don't mean to stare it wrong, but it might be more about energy healing or that kind of thing we're talking about, you know, which is also has a lot of history. I mean, cultures for thousands of years have been working with this kind of thing. So, but not really like Edgar Cayce. He's sort of an example on his own.
Yes,
he was. Mentioned the biophoton work here. That's just, the Ryan Center does a lot more things than there's time to talk about in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm learning. Yeah, it's so great. I'm soaking in every time you guys talk, and all the questions. I'm jotting notes down as I'm listening. But you're right. It's just it's so much. I would have to ask, like, what are when you and I don't know if this is a great question or not, but when you go to work, when you look at the data, when you do stuff, like, what's your favorite part? What are you excited to see? What excites you when you're looking at this?
Getting the reports.
reading these stories. They never. I've read thousands of them in my lifetime, and I'm still impressed with them. And when we bring in new people like Gonzalo here, who joins the team, it's like it starts all over again. The excitement is just as good as it was years ago when I first started.
Absolutely, it's like, you know, when. Like, my first encounter with these stories was through books. So imagine opening, you know, your institutional email and you get the report sent in to you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it feels kind of special because, in a way, we feel that people these days, because it's easier and, you know, it's really, it allows them to be anonymous. They use usually websites like Reddit, you know, or Yahoo Answers, and people, you know, they share the experience there, but we can't, as researchers, do anything about them, you know, because they're not under our, you know, our realm of control, you know, questionnaires and forms. So we're really excited each time someone, you know, gives a little bit of their time and to report their experience to mm-hmm. us. It's really special because we can then think about these stories, see the patterns, see how we can actually help intern people, you know?
I think we're winding up, but I wanted to point out a couple of things that are on our website. Because not only can people report an experience, which of course is what we want everyone to do, something that happens here is people call up and they say, I'm really psychic and I want you to test me. And we don't really test people then say, yep, you're psychic and here's your card. We just don't do that. I mean, it's not something we do, but I think people have a misconception about that. But there is an area on our website under the heading What We Do, and it's under Research and Protocol Policies, and it says that if you think you have psychic experiences that might interest the RON, you can report those there. Sometimes people do come in that do have enough proof of their abilities, certainly around PK and things like that. The other thing that's interesting for the community is there's a place that's called Ask a Scientist. And if you have a question and you would like to have that answered as best as we can in the areas that we study, you can send in a question to Ask a Scientist. So those are just ways that people can become informed and help us to be informed as well, that's all on our website. Mm-hmm. And of course you can join as a member, which also helps our work continue, and you can come to visit us and see our programs are simulcast live, so you can listen to them. That's right. We have two programs a month usually, and they're simulcast live. So if you live in Detroit, you can still watch.
Or Long Island
for that matter.
Cool. Wink, wink. let me ask you one question. So if there was, like, say, anything that I thought that was a cool piece of evidence from an investigation that I have, and you guys have a scientist at your institute or research center, can I send them something?
a number of people do want to do that, but it isn't like we have the resources to put this information in the hands of just a researcher. I think more of the information they want is a collection of experiences, not just one thing.
Okay.
So they want more than just a I can read your mind from the other room type thing. As I say, go to the website and read it, and it might be a little more clear.
I suppose if you had a poltergeist case that were to come up, that you could get a consultation maybe. But you may have those people there, but I'm thinking in terms of John Cruz and Graham Watkins. We have a really good active research team. It only meets once a month, but we have a weekly research discussion group. And people will come in here with puzzles or articles or things they don't understand. And we have this network of really bright people. Just some of them just come in from other places, too. And they give ideas that you just don't get from any one or two people. You know, sitting right here, the three of us don't have ideas like I would get if I went to this research discussion group. So there are ways of getting information, but we are a small group. We're overloaded. Our research director is, you know, just terribly busy. So it doesn't move real fast always.
Right. Well, I would love to study.
But case studies, yes.
If I'm ever in your area, and I would love to network with you guys. You guys are all right in my book, and if I'm ever in your area, I'd love to, you know, help you guys out, maybe put together some kind of educational lecture or something, and, you know, maybe we can network in the future, and we can share our links on our websites and things like that. You know, I'd be glad to do that.
Yeah, well, just keep watching us and keep in touch, and that's the way, I guess.
And also go, I'm going back to the website, but the Education Center, RonEducationCenter.org, take a look at that. Lloyd Arbach has given classes. A number of people have given classes, and maybe that would put a bee in your bonnet as well.
Right. Anybody who takes one of those classes has access to interact with, like Lloyd, for instance, or the John Cruz is teaching, or some of the other people that he's got.
Right.
So that's another door in, if not for yourself, you know, maybe for somebody you're guiding along.
Right. Are there any current projects that you currently want to share with our listeners that anybody can attend in your area, or anything you'd like to share in general that you're working on, and, you know, briefly share where they can get that info?
I can't think of anything that we haven't covered. The Friday night programs.
Well, we just have our Friday, not just, we have our Friday night programs. We also do something, the next one we're having is November. We have something called Psy Games, and Psy is PSI, Psy Games. And we have this a couple of times a year where we do testing with the Zener cards and some of the random number generated machines here from the past. We do remote viewing, and we do, what do we do? The Zener card, did I say that? What else
mm-hmm.
do we do?
So that,
spoon bending. We end with a spoon bending party. So.
That's great.
And there's always the spoons that are bent, always.
I love
the
classic
spoons.
The classic spoon bending with in the movie Poltergeist with they found the spoons bent on their kitchen table.
Well, we have a sign in the kitchen that says no spoon bending.
That's funny.
Or replace it.
Yeah.
No, it's a great place to work, even though some of us don't get paid, but it's a very interesting place to be, and I wouldn't be spending my time here.
Yeah.
If it weren't.
So, again, like Tiff said earlier, we're getting down to the wire here. Again, I want to thank all three of you. You can have wonderful guests on our show tonight. Gonzalo and Susan Freeman and the renowned Dr. Sally Rhinefeather. Any last words? Any advice for our listeners?
Send in a report. You're not alone. You're really not alone. There's a lot more of this going on. Clergymen, politicians, mothers, fathers, this is something that happens to everybody. It's not
be anonymous if you're a politician.
Yeah, it's something. It's an experience that many, many, many people share. It's confusing sometimes, but it's not. You're not alone.
That's awesome. Thank you guys so much. I hope to keep in touch with you. And like I said, I'd love to network with you guys, and maybe we can hook up our links to one another. And I don't know. We'll talk in the future.
You guys are awesome.
Okay, too,
guys.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, thank you so much, guys. I wish you best of luck in your future projects.
All right. You too.
All right. Take care, guys.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Wow. Great guest there, Tim.
Knowledgeable.
Yeah, very knowledgeable. What'd you think?
I thought it was great. And the best thing I like about it is, I think we have a lot of people that hear parapsychology and parapsychology study. And, hopefully listening to them brings a little bit more clarification about what they do, about what parapsychology is, and where they can go to get information about it and see what they do and how they do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, and the webinars, or I don't know if they call it a webinar, but the ability to watch speeches, lectures, I guess, is incredible. I think that would be a really good resource for somebody that has a general interest in it and can learn more about it.
Yeah, and that's what our show is all about. So I hope tonight's episode was extremely educational. It was for me.
Oh, it was for me too. I learned a lot about it.
Yeah, they were great guests. They were awesome. And again, thank you to them, all three of them.
They sound like they would be a lot of fun to work with.
Yeah, absolutely. They're down to earth. They're not like all gung ho about research. They're very personable, they're very, obviously very approachable. And because Gonzalo said, he approached Sally, and then they started to work together. And so it's not like they're not reachable. So you can contact them at rhine.org. Check out their website. Like I said, it's very knowledgeable, a lot of information on there. And they have history, they have links on what they do, webinars, like Tim said. Just really fascinating work. I commend them a lot. So I got the calendar out, because as always, at the end of the show, I like to make my announcements for when our upcoming guests are. Tim, you're all alone, buddy, on July 24th. You think you can handle it?
Oh, bring it. I haven't broken anything yet.
All right. July 24th, I have a trip to go to, so I'm not going to be here. The following week, we don't have a guest, but I'm sure I will come up with someone, maybe Kenny. I don't know. However, August 7th, guess what's coming back to our show?
What is it?
Our Knights of the Round Table.
Oh, yeah.
Our annual Knights of the Round Table that we always have. Well, I thought, you know, we would do things a little different this year and have them at least once a season. We used to have it, like, twice a year. But I think we're up to our fourth annual Knights of the Roundtable.
That's good.
And we have some great participants this year. We have a returnee, Chip Reichenfeld, my mentor and good friend and colleague.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, good guy. Wrote the book, Even the Dead Won't Tell You the Truth. I read it. It's great. I suggest you go and pick it up. It's available on Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble. And we have Mark Kies. We've had him on as a guest before. He works for the PPA. He's been on The Haunted, on the Animal Planet, paranormal show. I've worked with close mediums that he's worked with, Virginia Centrillo and Jack Omina, who we've worked with personally. And Mark Hayes he's a police officer for Pennsylvania, and he also has a book out called Chasing Shadows, so he'll be another participant. We have Chris DeCesare, another author of I'm having a fart brain fart moment. Oh boy,
another good guy.
Yeah, another good guy. And yeah. Yeah, Chris has another great book out, and I'm going to be, I'm very lucky and fortunate to be speaking on his behalf at the great event at Geneseo, New York, at the SUNY College. It's going to be October 17th. It's the 30th anniversary, the haunting C2D1, his experience that he had during his college years, and he wrote a book about it. And,
you're going to have to get a suit and tie.
Yeah. you're going to have to put a tux on, I guess.
Oh, a tux would even be cooler.
and we have Mike Diamond from Paranormal Warehouse.
I like Mike.
You know, will be part of our Knights of the Round Table as well. So, I don't know. It was a great show. I don't know. Any last tidbits to add, Tim?
Wonderful guests. I like the best thing about this is I hope if anybody listens and has an interest in parapsychology that I mean, of course, we didn't touch on hardly anything in depth, and understandably so. However, the resource is there. The website is out. You know, and you got to hear them and what they do a little bit and how they do it. And I hope if anybody has some interest, or if anybody has stories or experiences that they want to talk about, they can now have a place to go. And not only that, but they have a place to go that will take it seriously and use that information if they so wish, if the person giving the report so wishes, into a collective of other data that will help the research.
Absolutely.
I'm all about that.
Yeah. And again, that website is rhine.org, rhine.org, real simple to remember. And I hope everybody enjoyed our show tonight. I know I did. I know Tim did. And we always aim to please.
Yeah, and speaking of which, again, anything you want to give feedback to us about so we can continue to get better, please do. Love the feedback. You're not going to hurt our feelings. Just whatever you would like to hear different, anything that we can do to help improve the quality of what we're doing, let us know. And we take the feedback seriously, and we just want to get better.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I couldn't have said it better myself. Don't be afraid to send us feedback. We won't bite you. So, with that said, everybody have a good weekend, and till the next time, have a good night, guys. Have a good weekend.
Thank you for tuning into Paranormal Talk Radio. We broadcast live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Don't be intimidated by the hosts. We would love to get your feedback about our show, whether it is good or bad. You can can leave comments on our Blog Talk webpage or email us privately at paranormaltalkradio@gmail.com. Would you like to interact with other listeners or the host during the show? Register free with Blog Talk Radio to chat with us live during the show. You can also look us up on Facebook, answer questions and polls, and get the latest news. Until next time, see you on the other side.